Well, thank you so much for your welcome. It is great to be here. And I drove down last night, stayed with Phil across the road, so my commute this morning was all of 50 yards. I know some of you have travelled an awful lot further than that to get here, so thanks so much for coming. And really looking forward to exploring the theme that I've been given for today, which is this whole topic of developing leaders in the local church. Let me just give you an overview of what I want to try and do as we go through the course of this morning, and then we're going to dive in and see how we can do this in the very best way we can. What I want to try and do is to answer three very simple questions. I want to initially just ask very briefly the question why. Why might it be important for us as those who are in leadership in a whole variety of different ways in the life of local churches, why might it be important for us to develop leaders? We're not going to take very long on that, but we are going to ask that question. Secondly, and more lengthily, I want to explore the question who. Who are we looking to develop? And at that point, we're going to turn to the Bible, and we're going to look at a number of different passages to help us shape our understanding of who we're looking for when it comes to the developing of leaders. And those two will take this first session before we go to coffee. And then after coffee, I want to answer the question or explore the question how. How do we actually do this? What are the practicalities of developing leaders on the ground that might actually help us in the sort of roles that we find ourselves in to be nurturing, growing, developing others in leadership? The morning will involve a mixture of a bit of interaction between you. I'm going to get you to do a bit of work in pairs, I'm afraid. I know now some of your hearts have already sunk, but it will be okay. And I'll do some input from the front, and I hope there'll be a good amount of interaction between us as we together try and help each other think through this theme of developing leaders in the local church. So that's where we're going as we go through the course of the morning. A couple of introductory comments that I want to offer right at the start before we move to our first question. The first introductory comment is this. The aim of every Christian leader is not to be a Christian leader first. If you read around the literature on leadership development, and particularly if you read around the stuff which is in the sort of wider world, what you'll discover is there's all sorts of ways of defining leader and leadership. One of the common ways that they'll sort of slightly half-heartedly, half-jokingly talk about in, for example, the business world is, how do you know if someone is a leader? Answer, look behind to see if anyone else is following. If not, they're just going for a walk on their own. But for you and I, that definition will not do. Because the first priority for every Christian leader is not to be a leader. It is to be a follower of Jesus Christ. The first priority for every Christian leader is to be a disciple, someone who follows closely Jesus and therefore is a safe person to follow. And I've been involved in this whole leadership development stuff now for a good number of years, and I passionately believe in the place of leadership in the life of the local church, but I am always concerned that people lift up leadership to too high a level. Folks, if we're in leadership, we need to keep that pretty low, and we need to keep discipleship of Jesus Christ very high. So my first introductory comment is, leader's priority is not to lead, the leader's priority is to follow. Second, very simple introductory comment, none of this will be news to you, but I just wanted to lay my sort of assumptions out, is that if we give to others tasks, what we will grow is followers. If we give to others responsibilities, authority, what we will grow is leaders. Now, I am aware that that is not as black and white as I have just made it. Because, of course, in the giving of tasks to others, you will be nurturing stuff within them which may well lead them to become and take up positions of leadership. But I think there's enough in that sentence to just be aware of that simply delegating tasks on their own will not be the greatest way to ultimately develop and grow leaders. There is something about the giving away of authority, the giving away of responsibility that is inherent to developing others as leaders. And I say that because a colleague of mine who has been with us now at CPS for about 5 years Prior to joining CPS, he was in the RAF and had been fairly senior in the RAF and been in the RAF for 30 years. And his observation now, having worked with church leaders, mainly with clergy around the country, is this. He has two observations which I find fascinating. He says, James, as I've worked with clergy over the last 5 years, I've got two things that I've observed. First of all, most clergy are solo operators, not team players. Even those, he says, who speak about team and about developing others actually like to keep the authority and the control firmly located with themselves. And the second observation he made, which isn't directly related to what I'm saying at the moment, but is also interesting, his second observation is this, that actually he would suggest that one of the greatest qualities we need to grow in leadership within the Church of England today is courage. Courage. That's another whole day that we could do. But I'm fascinated by those two insights. And, inevitably it's not going to be true for all clergy, but those are the two things that he's picked up as he's worked. And it does resonate with some of the stuff that I know of myself. I was brought up in an environment where the bottom line was, you need to make sure you do it. And if you need to do it on your own, you do it on your own. And the biggest struggle that I have had as somebody who's been in Christian leadership now for 35 years, the biggest struggle I've had is actually recognizing that biblically, leadership in the New Testament is not solo. It is corporate. It is community. It is actually something which requires others to be in leadership with me. And as somebody who was schooled in sort of independent solo operation, it has been a real personal challenge to work out not just the giving of tasks, but also the giving of responsibility and authority. So those are my two introductory comments. First priority of every leader is to be a follower and to recognize that there is a distinction to be made between simply the giving of tasks and actually being willing to give away authority, to give away responsibility. And I know those are two big things, but I wanted to lay them out there as we enter into the three questions that we're going to explore. And here's the first one. And fairly briefly, I simply want to ask the question, why? Why would we want to develop leaders in the local church? And the way I'd like to do this, just to get our grey cells buzzing first thing in the morning, is to turn into pairs with somebody who's next to you. You've got about 2 or 3 minutes to come up with as many reasons as you can as to why developing leaders in a local church might be a good thing to do. 2 or 3 minutes, and then we'll hear back some of the things that you've identified. Over to you. Okay, let's hear some of the things. Now, I just need to let you know, I am currently completely deaf in this ear. It's nothing serious, but the treatment I'm receiving at the moment has made it even worse. So my head is split in half, and I might struggle to hear what you're saying. So if you find me doing this, it's just so that I can try and hear what you're saying. Forgive me if I don't immediately pick up your comments. But let's harvest some of the things that we've just identified. Why might it be a good idea to develop leaders in a local church? Let's call them out. Yes.
My friend here said to keep us humble.
Yeah. Great. To keep us humble. Yep. Let's keep them coming. Say a bit more about that one. Yes. Yep. So we come, those of us who are clergy will come and go, but others will be there often for a very much longer time than we might be. Okay, thank you. To anchor stuff in the local community. Yes, nice and loud.
It's fun. It's a joy and privilege to see people grow.
Yeah, absolutely. It's fun and it's a joy and privilege to see people grow. Absolutely right. I'm just repeating these for the tape, which apparently is being recorded. Yeah, the only sustainable model that will work, absolutely. There's that little line, isn't there, that without successors, there is no success. It's just about sustainability, both in the present and in the future. Yeah, Richard. Oh, you were going to say something? No. Okay, others? Yeah.
Preventing the clergy person being the cork in the bottle, the log jam, the lid on
yeah.
the jar.
Yeah.
Okay,
so preventing the clergy person being the cork in the bottle, the lid on the jar, the log jam. We could probably add other images to that. Yep, absolutely. Great. Other ones? Other reasons why, yes.
It seems to be a biblical pattern.
Yeah.
Jesus to grow his people in depth and in numbers by leaders.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's something about it being a biblical pattern, so we're following what Jesus seemed to be advocating and practicing himself. Yeah, other ones? Yeah, right at the back. Yes, yeah. So there are those who will mature through the process of being developed as a leader, and conversely may actually wilt if that doesn't happen. That's a very, very important one. Yeah, other ones?
Yep.
So there's something, isn't there, about the envisioning process and actually bouncing ideas around and engaging others in all of that, which is healthy. There's somebody else who's waving a hand. Yes.
It talks about the direction and trying to keep the youth on track, right?
Yeah.
And in particular, with all member ministry, recognizing all agents of God's mission.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's stuff around direction and every member ministry and actually there being a sense of we're all in this together, we have things to contribute, be a part of. Roger at the back? Yeah, yeah, we need the diversity in the team of the leaders. I mean, it's very interesting, you'll be aware of this, but research which is done into leadership shows very, very clearly that even the most exceptional leaders on planet Earth do not have all the talents required for leadership. You just don't, no human being has them. So if we want really good leadership, we need the diversity of different people working together who bring different things to the leadership stuff that needs to be done. So there's a very practical reason why actually the developing of leaders and leading with others is an important part of how we go about it. Any last one or two? Any other ones? Yep, just over here.
It's a rediscovery of the baptismal
call to ministry. Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah, so, and I think that's theologically such an important thing, isn't it? Baptism is the ordination of God's people, and it's a rediscovery of that. And then somebody over here. Say a bit more. Right, okay. Right, okay, so it's about mission, it's for the church being what the church is called to be, allowing people to be involved and engaged in all sorts of different ways. Now, the reason I don't want to spend long on this one is because my hunch is you've come, you probably don't need convincing. But there may well be some folks in the churches from which we've come who are not quite so sure about this issue. And actually simply exploring with them, why might it be important for us to be about the developing of leaders can be an unlocking process. Because my experience of doing that sort of thing in churches is that it doesn't take very long for an average group of people to come up with a good number of very sensible reasons why this would be a good thing to do. And as they come up with those ideas themselves, they begin to go, oh yeah, yeah, I can see maybe we ought to be really committing a bit more to this than we currently have been or have done in the past, or it's great what we are doing, but we maybe could develop it in this way. It's also interesting, isn't it, that the research that was done quite recently, from anecdote to evidence, I don't know if you've come across this report, this is the short version of a much longer, and if you have the time, worth reading report, the longer version. But one of the things that they identified in terms of ingredients that might help churches to grow, and here is the 8 character ingredients that they identified in the research, one of them actually is that there is an engaging of people in leadership, and that it's not just the engaging of ordained or staff, it's the engaging of lay. That there is something about leadership in this mix that actually helps churches to be growing. One of the interesting insights from the research was this, that actually one of the keys is not to allow people to be in any role too long. Some years back I was doing some work with PCCs, quite large groups of PCCs, lots of PCCs coming together, and my colleague and I who were doing it at the time used to have this little sort of rolling thing that we did to find out who had been on the PCC longest. And, you know, we regularly had people who had been on the PCC or been church wardens for 20 years, occasionally 30 years, and then we had somebody who'd been church warden for 40 years. And we thought that was extraordinary. And on one level, whoa, great commitment. Then we came across somebody who had been church warden for 60 years. Now, I'm not sure if any of you can beat that. You maybe can, but 60 years was pretty impressive. And on one level, of course, it is a commendable service. But actually, what the research shows is that if people stay a long time in the role, then actually, of course, what happens is, rather than the clergy person necessarily being the blockage, they very easily can become the blockage as well. And there's not the development of others behind them that actually enables the stopping of wilting, as you were describing, occurring in other people's lives. And there's something about some fluidity in the roles that people inhabit that actually helps to keep a good and healthy environment for the development of others in the life of churches. So why? Well, there's a whole bunch of reasons why. We've identified them. There's a whole range of reasons why it might be a good idea for us to give time and energy to the development of others as leaders. A principle that I am so grateful I was taught early on in my Christian life. I'm not from a Christian home. Came to faith as a teenager. Sort of got involved with sort of Christian things as a younger person. But I was very grateful that somebody taught me this principle. For the sake of many, invest in a few. And I don't think there's probably anybody in the room for whom that's new. We've all heard that before in some format or other. But what I do think is that if we're honest, those of us who are in leadership roles know how easy it is for everything about the role to draw us to exactly the opposite place. That we have to be equally available to everyone, that actually we're consumed, our time is consumed with other things, so that actually this is one of the things we get round to last rather than first. But I'm absolutely convinced this principle, I would even suggest it might even be called a Jesus principle, for the sake of many, invest in a few, is an important principle to hold on to in leadership life. Tough as it is to actually do it in practice. And I can look back over the decades that I've been a Christian with great gratitude for those who lived this principle out themselves and just invested in me a little bit. I wouldn't be standing here if it hadn't been for others who had spotted things in me that I had not seen in myself and invested in me and invested in me and invested in me. And I am so grateful that folks took the time to do that. And I have sought to try and live this out myself. For the sake of many, invest in a few who you teach for the sake of many to invest in a few and it ripples out. Who for the sake of many invest in a few and it ripples out. I think if you read through Mark's Gospel, which you can do in about an hour and 40 minutes, that it's quite clear that Jesus consistently spends time, well, we know there's the crowd, and then from the crowd there's the 70 or 72, from the 72 there's the 12, from the 12 it's arguable that there is the 3 or 4, even from the 3 or 4 it might be arguable there's the 1. But consistently Jesus, for the sake of many, is investing in a few. Why? Because he knew that he had to get ready for what was to come and have those who would be prepared to take on what he was encouraging them to do. And so this principle has been a great principle to try and live by as somebody who's been in leadership. But it is not easy. Because I think the challenges and demands of average leadership life mean it's very easy to get drawn away from this particular thing. So if we take this why as being a sufficiently big reason for us to think, yep, okay, this is something we need to be doing, the next question I just want to explore is the who. Who are we going to invest in? How do you spot potential leaders? What are we actually looking for? So let's grab our Bibles at this point, and we're going to land in a number of places through the New Testament, and just allow these passages to shape our thinking about who we're looking for when it comes to the investment in leaders, and explore some ideas around this particular question. So let's turn to the reading we had just a moment ago from Mark chapter 3, verse 13 to 19. And this is, as you know, early on in Jesus' public ministry. We have Jesus, who we know from Luke's Gospel, the equivalent account, has spent a night up the mountain in prayer. And as he comes down the mountain, we're told that in verse 13, he calls to him those whom he wanted, and they came to him. And he, verse 14, appointed 12, whom he also named apostles. And in terms of what we're looking for, there is something about looking for those whom God has called, in whom God is prompting. There's something about spotting what is going on in people's lives because God is at work in their lives and looking to work with that. Now, this whole language of call is very complex and somewhat controversial. And I know that as soon as we use the language of call in the life of the church, there are some who immediately have a very limited understanding of what that means. And they see it as some sort of mystical or mysterious experience. It might not quite be writing on the wall, but it is something sort of close to that. And there are some who have a call. They're normally monks, missionaries and ministers. And then there's the rest of people who don't. Well, that's not how I think the Bible helps us to understand this language of call. Seems to me the language of call through the New Testament is used primarily about being called to be followers of Jesus Christ. And out of that calling, one then, of course, works out how does this particular individual shape their discipleship in a way which will mean it is distinct to the person next to them. The particularities of God's call in their discipleship. And what we're looking for here is a recognition that God is at work in people's lives and he will be prompting a work at people's lives in a way that may lead them towards leadership roles. It is fascinating that the Church of England has, is it 8, 9 criteria for the selection of those who are going to be ordained? The first one is to do with this issue of call and vocation. And when you read it, it's not describing some mystical experience, but what they are looking for is some sense that God is leading you in this way. Well, I think it's true in the local church that what we're looking for is some sense that God might be at work in people's lives and leading them in this way. But it is equally true that for a very large number of people, their sense of that will be very small and your sense of that may be a lot bigger. And that part of what we're looking to do often is spot people who do not necessarily think themselves able or willing to do something and encouraging and nurturing to the point where they actually go, you know what, maybe I could give it a go after all. And so it's in this lovely combination of being the body of Christ that we are looking for those whom God is calling. And I think Jesus offers us a pattern here that is worth taking on board. Jesus spends a night in prayer before he chooses the 12. Sadly, we have no record of what happened and what he was praying about during that night of prayer. But we do know from a reading of the Gospels that Jesus seems to pray before important moments, take extra time to do that. And here he is choosing the 12. And his choice is fascinating. And I just wonder if one of the things that we need to be about is the other Lord's Prayer. Pray for the Lord of the harvest to send workers. We need to be praying so that actually we are open to whom God might be at work in and spotting the potential in individuals. And whether that's that gentle nudge of the Spirit which says, what about? And actually it's somebody we would never have thought of. Or whether it's a sort of more rational way of identifying potential leaders to invest in. It seems to me we are looking for those whom God is leading in that way, leading in that direction. And God is at work in that way. Looking for those whom God is calling in some way. I find it fascinating that there are 13 occasions in the Acts of the Apostles where it says, and they prayed. Do you know where the first occasion is? First occasion is in the replacement of Judas. And I know they went on to then cast lots, and we could have a very interesting theological debate about all of that. But it is interesting that they prayed before they chose Judas. I just wonder if they picked that up from Jesus, who prayed before he chose them. And they prayed. And the seeking of, the looking for those whom God is at work in and is leading that way is one of the things that we might look to do. Here's the second. Acts chapter 6. Fascinating, isn't it? Early church, let's turn to Acts 6. And we have those well-known incidents in Acts chapter 6. Now, during those days when the disciples were increasing in number, the Hellenists complained against the Hebrews because their widows were being neglected in the daily distribution of food. And the 12 called together the whole community of the disciples and said, it's not right that we should neglect the word of God. Chap at the back there, could you just hit escape on my laptop and then hit F5 for me? Escape and F5. You good man. Thank you so much. Just get back to where we need to be. Acts chapter 6, and we have this amazing incident, really, where the church is growing and the 12 call them together, verse 2, and they say, it's not right that we should neglect the word of God in order to wait at tables. Therefore, friends, select from among yourselves 7 men of good standing, full of the Spirit and of wisdom, who we may appoint to this task, while we, for our part, will devote ourselves to prayer and to serving the word. And then they do it, and they come up with some people. What I find interesting about this passage, of course, is they are appointing people to roles of leadership, of responsibility. And what do they look for? Well, here we're told they look for people of good reputation, full of the Spirit, and of wisdom. Folks, I think those are 3 great things to be looking for in people that we want to grow as leaders. People who are, let's say, first of all, in good reputation. The words here mean in good standing with others. Those who are trustworthy. People of integrity. Respected. Faithful in the small things. Because if they're faithful in the small things, they are more likely to be faithful in the slightly bigger things that they are given. Look for people of good reputation, they say. Good standing. Secondly, full of the Spirit. Now, they're going to organise the waiting of tables, but they want them to be people who are full of the Spirit. So as we're thinking about people who may take on leadership roles, it might be the leadership role of coordinating some aspect of the life of the church. What are we going to look for? People who have a good reputation, who others respect and recognise some integrity in. Look for those who are full of the Spirit, who are clearly those who are followers of Jesus, who are channels for God's use, where the evidence of the Spirit in their lives includes the growing fruit of the Spirit and the gifts of the Spirit that have been given to them being nurtured in service of God's kingdom purposes. Thirdly, those who are full of wisdom. Full of wisdom. Of course, this needs to be appropriate to the age and stage of their lives. You don't expect to find in a 17-year-old you're looking to nurture and develop as a leader a 47-year-old's wisdom. It needs to be appropriate to the age and stage of life. But wisdom. My little hunch is this. Wisdom is probably one of the most important qualities for leadership. Wisdom is probably one of the most important qualities for leadership. Because an awful lot of leadership is about being wise. And then they appoint them, and obviously that frees up the apostles to continue doing some other things. And then the lovely thing is, of course, as we know, they appoint Philip. And then guess what Philip gets up to just a couple of chapters later in the Acts of the Apostles? Extraordinary stuff. One of those who is named as an evangelist, and all sorts of exciting things happen. What are we going to look for? We're going to look for those whom God is calling, God is at work in. We're going to look for those of good reputation, full of the Spirit, and of wisdom. Here's the third thing. Look for those who are growing in Christ-likeness. Look for those who are growing in Christ-likeness. I'm going to offer a few passages here. We won't have time to turn to them all. But each of these indicates the importance of character in the leader. Luke chapter 22, 1 Timothy 3, verses 1 to 7, 2 Timothy 2, 2, Titus 1, 5 to 9, 1 Peter 5, 1 to 4. All of those actually emphasize the importance of Christ-like character, of character. Folks, there's an important distinction to be made here between personality and character. Technically, personality is about preferences and is value neutral. So I don't know how many of you here have done Myers-Briggs, any of you done Myers-Briggs? Yeah, a number of you, or 16PF5, or StrengthsFinder. These are all related to personality. And if you've done Myers-Briggs, you discover whether you're a, I don't know, you're a, get these four letters, don't you, an SPCK, or an EPNS, or an ISBN, or I don't know, whatever it is, you discover you're something. And they're just helpful insights into your preferences. So my preference in terms of the way I'm wired is that I'm an extrovert. I'm energized by being with people. My wife's preference is that she's an introvert. She's energized by time on her own, space. In fact, on all the Myers-Briggs things, we are exact opposites. It was a really helpful insight into some of the early struggles in our married life. We're exact opposites on every spectrum. But this is value neutral. It's not that extrovert is better and introvert is worse or the other way around. It's just neutral. That's personality. Character is not value neutral. It is value laden. We speak of people as being of good character or of poor character. And what's fascinating, if we take 1 Timothy 3 as an example out of those passages that I offered, in the 14 qualities that Paul writes to Timothy about that you're to look for in the life of the overseer, please note that this is a specific role in the life of the church. And therefore is not applicable to everyone who will be in leadership in church life. But for those who are taking on an overseer's role, there are 14 things that are listed in 1 Timothy 3. Fascinating that 11 of them are character issues. Two of them are competencies and one is something slightly different. Character is an important thing in the life of Christian leaders. Christ-like character. Paul's list is about above reproach, good reputation with outsiders, humility, servant-heartedness. There's a whole range of things. Self-controlled, respectable, hospitable, not given to much wine, not violent, but gentle, not quarrelsome, not a lover of money. These are character traits that Paul is saying. You need people who have got these character qualities. And when we're looking to develop leaders, we need to be looking at the character side of things as well, ultimately, as the competence side of things. But there is a strong bias in the scriptures to encourage us, don't gloss over the character thing. Take time to look at that. When I was first ordained many years ago and served my curacy, I knew this principle of for the sake of many, invest in a few. I was only 23, 24 years old when I was ordained. I was very young, very green behind the ears. But because I was bright-eyed and bushy-tailed and knew the principle of for the sake of many, invest in a few, within 6 weeks of arriving at my parish, I'd already spotted them. The three people that I was going to spend the next 3 years pouring my life into. And I have to tell you, within 6 months, so 6 weeks I'd spotted them, 6 months later, I realized that I'd actually, on one level, made a wrong choice with every single one of them. And as I reflected back on that, there were two reasons why I think I made a wrong choice on every single one of them. One was, I gave no time really to praying about it. And the other was, in 6 weeks, you can't get to know people's character very well. And what I discovered was, over the 6 months, was a whole bunch of character stuff that was not obvious in the early weeks that actually then made me think, oh my goodness, have I chosen wisely here? Now, I did go on to work with those folks and a few others as well, for the sake of many, invest in a few. But this character piece is so important. Look for those who are growing in Christ-like character. Now, I know that in some of your minds at this point, you're already going, oh my goodness, James, there's nobody in my church I could now choose just from those three qualities that you've mentioned. So let me make you even more miserable, and we will come back to that issue in a moment. Here's the fourth thing. Look for those with the right abilities to lead. If we're looking to grow and develop others as leaders, we know we need those with the right abilities to lead. Let me add a little phrase to that sentence. For the role we're looking them to lead in. Look for those with the right abilities to lead for the role we're thinking they might lead within. By which I mean this. Clearly, having some abilities for the role that you're going to lead in is an important part of being a leader in that role. But different roles require different leadership abilities. Different levels of leadership require different leadership abilities. And sometimes we might look for people for a leadership role and look for the abilities for that role, which are not related to the role but are a projection of our role onto that role. And then we're looking for qualities that are not necessarily fundamental to that leadership role per se. So what we're looking for is the abilities, right abilities to lead for a particular role. And that will differ. Nice and loud, sorry. It's the microphone going on and off. It's the speaker going on and off. Can we sort that out, anyone? Can I make a suggestion? If you can't hear, move forward. Do come and fill up the front seats. It's an Anglican gathering. They're always empty. Come and fill them up, and I will try and... okay, we're going to see if a new microphone... Let me just undress myself. Okay, are we on? Is that any better? Am I coming through or not? No. Yes, yes, yeah, okay, let's try that. Okay, so what I was suggesting was that the fourth thing is to look for those with the right abilities to lead for the role they're going to lead within. And that will differ according to the different roles that people are leading within. And the thing to watch out for is that we don't project our leadership, the abilities needed for our leadership role, onto another role where those leadership abilities aren't necessarily needed. So we're looking for the right abilities.
Can you give an example of that? I understand what you say, but can you show us how...
If somebody is going to exercise leadership, for example, of let's say, for example, you're setting up a CAP project, Christians Against Poverty project. If you were setting up a Christians Against Poverty project, you'll probably want somebody to give oversight to that, to exercise some leadership responsibility for that role. But there are aspects of that role which probably will mean there are certain qualities that you, as the overseer of the church, would have to have in your role, which are not necessarily in that role. One of them, I'm going to suggest rather controversially, is the list in 1 Timothy 3, of course, includes the competency for the overseer of the church to be able to teach the Bible. I'm not sure that the CAP leader needs to have that as their primary competence. There are other competencies they need, abilities they need to lead the CAP project. Now, I've already mentioned, of course, they need to be a follower of Jesus and all the other stuff we've mentioned. So it's about working out what is the appropriate ability for the role that they find themselves in. And then Christians Against Poverty. Christians Against Poverty. And there are other roles within the life of the church. So one of the things, of course, is that leadership is multi-layered in most churches' lives. We find leaders at all sorts of levels. And there are all sorts of ways you can define leadership. One of the most simple and basic definitions of leadership is three words long. Leadership is influence. Now, the problem with that definition, helpful as it is that it's not a sufficient definition. Because under that definition, of course, all of us have an area of influence in our lives where we exercise leadership. So it is helpful at one level. But there are other ways of defining leadership which help us to recognize that, for example, you might have small group leaders, you might have leaders of the creche work, you might have leaders of the children's group, the youth group, you might have leaders of projects like a CAP project. Or there's all sorts of different levels of leadership within the life of the church. And what I'm just encouraging us to do is to work out what are the abilities that are needed in this particular role. And to look for those in the person that we're trying to, if we're looking to encourage and develop them into that role. And they will differ according to the roles. So there's some generic things which will be true for every Christian leader, and then there are some specific things that you want to locate within a particular leadership role. So here's my little list. Look for those whom God is prompting, God is working. Look for those of good reputation for the Spirit. Look for those growing in Christ-like character. Look for those with the right abilities to lead for that role. It seems to me those are some of the things that the Scriptures encourages us to be focusing on and thinking about when it comes to the different types of roles that we're encouraging people to lead within. Martin, what time is coffee? Is it 11?
Yeah, about 2 minutes.
That's what I thought. Great. So here's the question I'd like us to explore for these last 2 minutes. How do you tell the difference between an unlikely prospect and an unwise choice?
It's a great question, isn't it? I didn't come up with it, so I can say that. It is a great question. How do you tell the difference between an unlikely prospect and an unwise choice? Let's work together on that. Call out some ideas. Yeah.
In retrospect.
Great line. And now we should all go to coffee because nobody's going to beat that one. Yeah. How do we tell the difference?
By whether they actually grow.
Right. So that's so you could do that before you choose somebody for a leadership position. You could actually see if they are growing. Yeah, so are they learning? Are they open to growth? Are they open to feedback? Is there a degree of humility, which means that that's something which is coming their way? Yep, so are they open to grow?
You made a choice, and you think it was the wrong one.
Yep.
Then you can see whether they grow.
Yep, and you can do it afterwards as well. Yep.
Probationary period.
Yeah, probationary period will help and give the possibility of discovering some stuff. Say a bit more.
Yeah.
So are they rooted? Are they rooted? Good. Yep. Other ones?
Sometimes a good sign is when people initially don't want the job.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you know, there's a lot of wisdom in that comment because the folks that I am often a little bit nervous are those who are jumping up and down saying, pick me, pick me, pick me. And whereas often those who are saying, oh, I'm really not sure if I... Yeah, are you sure you think you... They're often the ones who actually you can nurture into it and develop them. And yeah.
Could it be that unlikely just lacks positives, whereas unwise has negatives?
Just run me that. So the unlikely lacks...
Just lacks positives. You just have unknown.
Yeah.
So for that reason, you think they may be unlikely.
Yeah.
Whereas an unwise choice, you actually see them in
before
you actually choose them.
Yeah.
They have a lot of very strong positives.
Yeah, but you can still see some negatives as well. Good. Yeah, lovely. Richard?
Listening to the views of others, like...
Yeah, I would say that's one of the absolute critical things. If possible, never choose someone for a leadership role on your own. We are far more likely to get the unwise choice if we do it on our own. Why? Because every single one of us only has a limited perspective on any other human being. So I go, oh, I think Richard would be great. Richard would be a fantastic person to develop into a leadership role. And somebody else who I'm doing this process with says, well, do you know this about Richard? Oh, no, I hadn't seen that. Did you know this about Richard? Oh, no, I didn't see that. And suddenly I'm getting a different perspective on Richard. And actually choosing with others is absolutely key. If possible, it's not always possible, but if possible, always involve others in the process of thinking about who would it be good to nurture and develop into this leadership role. Yeah. Phil?
It's a bit of character stuff important. The unwise choice will always have character problems. The unlikely prospect may be someone who is yet to grow into those abilities.
Yeah. Yes, and I think this comes back to the comment I made earlier on, which I just want to end this session with, which is this. How high do you set the bar? Because if we look at those four things, it's possible to actually get to the point where you think, well, gosh, if I reflect back on my own life, nobody would have chosen me if they'd looked at that list. And I can't see anybody in my congregation who I'd choose now either. How high do you set the bar? And so the key here is, isn't it, is what we're looking for is potential, not end product. We're looking for signs of those four things. I don't know anyone, ultimately, Phil, that I've ever developed as a leader, and it certainly wasn't true of me, where I go, character sorted. Because we're all in process, aren't we? God's at work in our lives. None of us have got character issues sorted. I certainly haven't. But what I need to see is, I think, some movement in the right direction. So that's the growth, openness, humility, openness to feedback and stuff. And elements of those things, those four areas in the person's life, which makes me think, this is probably going to be a wise choice. Can't be sure. Can't be absolutely sure. And if you've knocked around leadership for any length of time and have been seriously investing in others as leaders, you'll know that you
if you have, you will know actually, if you've been doing it for a reasonable amount of time, that sometimes you end up with what turns out to be a very unwise choice. But you can only see that in retrospect. And that's a very costly place to get to.
Can I just challenge you to use the word unwise, which there are good choices and there are wise choices. Wise choices are the best of good choices.
Right.
Because you can only have the wisest, and you could get away with a project or a ministry of some sort or other if it's good. But there might be better options, but you're quite happy with good.
Right, thank you. Helpful comment.
And the difference between unlikely and wise or the unwise is simply unlikely means there are factors there present to make it possible.
Yeah. Thank you. Helpful comment. Thank you. But so what we're trying to do here is to work out, where do you set the bar? Well, you just need to be thinking very carefully about that and recognising very rarely we're going to be offered the perfect person. What we're looking for is potential so that we might grow and nurture. Yeah, last comment, then we go to coffee.
Can I just say, you know, with all this, if Jesus had asked all the people what he thought of the choice of his disciples, they would have thought it was mad.
Yeah.
And there is a divine aspect and a human aspect. Yep. And my experience is that sometimes you have to go in terms of developing leaders.
Yep.
And sometimes it does go belly up.
Yep.
But in the going belly up, the church learns something from that about where it does need to go.
Yeah.
So it's not, there is stuff going on beyond the human wisdom.
Yeah. And that takes me back to my first thing. Look for those for whom God is prompting. Look for those whom God is at work. It's hard to nail that down, isn't it? But there is something there where we just go, well, it just seems this is whom God is at work in and God is leading us to, God is calling, and we need to go with that. And that's why it's my first one. Because I think, for the very reason you identified in Mark chapter 3, one could argue, goodness me, look who Jesus chose. And of course, the other thing about the list in Mark 3 to be very aware of is, as the names are read out in verses 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, and 19, we get to the last name on the list, Judas Iscariot, who betrayed him. But we should not miss the fact that of the 12, all the others deserted him, and the very first one on the list denied him. So even the 12 that Jesus chose led to betrayal, desertion, and denial. And that's a very sobering warning for us all. A reality check moment for us all. And yet, because of God's grace, cross, resurrection, Pentecost, look whom God uses in the growing of the early church. The very people who deserted him. The very person who denied him. And that is a very important place for us to end as we go to coffee. Let's have a coffee break.